It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Whew, we're just coming off a big Apple announcement. New Apple Watches, new Apple phones, new Apple AirPods. What does it all mean? Andy Iannocco and Adam Hanks, join me next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 523, recorded Wednesday, September 7th, 2016. Courage. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited time offer. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere using your iPhone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, business, or online store. Enter the offer code MACBREAK and get 10% off. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers the latest news from Apple. And, oh, there's some news today. Andy Iannocco's here for the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to see you, Andrew, and the celestial waste of bandwidth. And Adam Engst is here from Tidbits, the oldest Mac publication and the best for years, since 1984, tidbits.com.
Being tired out by Apple for 26 years.
26 years. 26 years. That makes it 19. When did you start? 1990?
April of 1990 was
nice.
Issue one.
Very nice. So Andy and I got up a little early. Well, I got up early. Andy and is on the East Coast like you, Adam, so it wasn't early for you. But
Lunchtime
for you. And watched a very tight, very well-produced 2 hours from Apple this morning. We spent a lot of time talking about it, Andrew and I did. But what do you think, Adam?
I think it was well done. It was classic Apple. I mean, it was smooth. I thought the little intro with the carpool karaoke guy with Tim Cook at the beginning.
That's a great way to start, yeah.
It was amusing without being forced. I mean, put it that way. You know, I mean, they did a good job. I didn't feel, you know, it wasn't setting off the hokey meters, and which sometimes happens in these things. And just, I mean, as an overview thing, I just want to say I think they're doing, Apple continues to do a really good job of diversity of presenters.
You know, no kidding.
That's just, I mean, hopefully we can stop talking about this soon, mm-hmm, because it'll just, mm-hmm, be the standard. But it was just nice to see that it wasn't all the old white guys. So,
well, you know, and Andy pointed out during the event that the photographs that they used to demonstrate the new iPhone camera also featured a lot of people of color, which was really a good and actually has kind of an undercurrent there that's very important, that traditionally film has been tuned for Caucasian faces.
Precisely. I mean, a lot of this, when they were talking about the image signal processor in the iPhone 7, they didn't say it, but we were sitting there looking at the photos going, and they've clearly included stuff in the code in this so that it is not going to screw up on people whose skin is not, well, mine color.
That's huge. You're about as pale as can be.
I've got ghosting.
I think they need to do something about you.
Can you darken this up a little bit?
But no, I think that that's a kind of inclusiveness that Apple didn't even refer to, but is very obvious in the event, and I welcome it. I think that's fantastic. Apple's a global company too, so it's more than just, you know, being inclusive of different people in the U.S. It's being global.
It is, and it's fascinating. I mean, one of the things, you know, I'm in Ithaca, I'm at Cornell University, tons of Chinese people here, and you know, people from China, and one of the things that you see actually a lot of times is women in the summer walking around with umbrellas. That skin color has lots of cultural meaning, yeah. And people think very deeply about this. So, you know, anything Apple can do to be respectful of people's opinions and whatnot is just a good thing. You know, I mean, the terrible example when Google Photos was accidentally identifying black people as gorillas, you know, that's about as bad as it gets. Yeah. But even the little stuff, you know, making sure that when it's doing white balance and skin tone stuff, that it's picking up on all the gradations of what is out there.
Well, speaking of tones, we have some new phones. We have some new watches. We have new earbuds or AirPods. We have a lot to talk about. How should we do? Maybe we just go chronologically through the presentation. Maybe that's the easiest way to do it. Do it the way in the order Apple did. Although by the time we got to the end, there were a lot of things, a lot of questions, a lot of things missing. Yeah. In a 2-hour event, that moved that quickly. They obviously got as much in as they could, but nevertheless, there's still some questions. And we're doing this right after the event, so there may be some answers that we still don't have that we will have given the leisure to peruse the documentation. So it started, as you mentioned, with James Corden. And this is really a nod to the fact that Apple has acquired Carpool Karaoke as a show, not with James Corden. He won't be doing it, but they're going to be selling that as an Apple exclusive, I guess, on iTunes.
I think Tim Cook is going to be driving everyone around.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what Carpool Karaoke means if you don't have James Corden. I mean, he's what makes it work.
Also, let's not bury the lead of that segment. Apple, the CEO himself, is demonstrating Apple wearable technology for the very first time in the company's history. When he put on those, I don't know what purpose the LEDs in those glasses serve. I'm guessing that it's sort of an IR-based audio transport system. Maybe for groupware?
I think actually what you're missing, even more important, the Apple technology here, Andy, which is notice that James Corden is not watching where he's going most of the time. It may say Range Rover or whatever on back there, but this is clearly an Apple self-driving car.
Oh, interesting. I love the way Pharrell just appears magically and disappears from the back seat. Pharrell, who was when the Apple Watch first came out, was the first person I saw wearing a edition, the gold Apple Watch, on his wrist, notably not wearing it in the back seat of James Corden's self-driving Apple car.
Well, that's last year's watch. He just wanted to be seen wearing last year's watch. He wants to be shown wearing the ceramic watch. I bet, and you can better believe, like, he was told, Pharrell, what did we tell you? Take the watch off and put it in your pocket. This is for the top of the show, not the end.
Apple did, by the way, we should just quickly, because I don't want people fast-forwarding. the Watch Series 2 and the new iPhone 7 and 7 Plus will be available for pre-order on Friday in many countries, and then the following week in many, many more countries. I presume that means a midnight wake-up call for you and me, and then 3 a.m. for you guys back east, midnight Pacific.
Last year when it came to the Apple Watch, the only reason why we got them, I had basically said, I'm getting off the bandwagon. I cannot do this 3 a.m. nonsense. But, you know, I brought the laptop into the bedroom just in case, you know, happened to be awake.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At literally 3:02 a.m., my son, who was up late doing homework, wakes me up by printing on the laser printer in the other room.
And thank God he did.
Yeah, I was like, I guess I'm awake.
This is
now.
One case you snooze, you lose. By the way, not just the watch, but also the new iPhone. And the one that's going to be so hard to get, I think, will be this piano black 256 gigger.
Yeah.
That I'm thinking if you don't get up at midnight on Friday, you're out of luck. They will arrive in stores and be available for delivery September 16th. So I'm leaving for vacation September 18th. So let's hope Apple's serious about that delivery. That delivery day.
That one's gonna be so black.
The matte black finish they call this is that we call our new black finish black.
Yeah. Okay. Josh Center suggested it should be tactical black.
Tactical black.
We just can't do it anymore.
Why aren't they calling it piano black? They're calling it jet black. It's shiny black though. It is piano black. What we traditionally call, right?
I think because there are other phones that are calling themselves piano black, and got to be new.
It implies plastic.
There's something from Hitchhiker's Guide about the blackness, which I got.
Oh yeah, it's the ship of hot black Desiato. It's black, so black that light seems to fall out of it. I just pushed a button and a black button and a black light lit up in black to tell me not to push that button again. Yes.
Wow, very impressive.
Yes.
Andy and Notco with Frizzin.
It was sort of a formative book in my youth. But for me, the best. So the new watch has GPS, which people were looking forward to. It's swim proof, which all people were also looking forward to. Really, very much pushing all the health features that are going on there. I think the coolest hardware thing that Apple has done in a number of years is having a mechanical thing that just sort of like squirts the water out of the speaker port. It actually uses a speaker driver to actually squeeze out the water from it. How many videos we're going to see on day one of people trying to get like an actual visual of that coming
out?
It's
a really small dog inside that shakes it.
I just would love to have been a fly on the wall at that engineering meeting where somebody's eyes light up and he goes, you know, we could... And what is the noise that you have to play to get the phone to become a squirt gun? So let's.
All I know is I'm gonna 3D design and put up on Maker put on a Thingiverse a tiny tiny little spittoon that you can leave just for comic effect when you're charging your watch.
So built-in GPS, water resistance to 50 meters, suitable for swimming, twice as fast, dual core processor, twice as bright. Now I never found the old watch to be less than bright, but
No, in the sun, I can't see it at all.
Okay. So you're a runner, Adam. Do you still use the Apple Watch for running, or do you use a Polar or some other?
What I usually do is the double-barreled approach with a Garmin 620 in the Apple Watch. And actually, I don't do that in races. That's the one time when I specifically take the Apple Watch off. It's not that the Apple Watch is useful. It's more just that I don't like taking watches on and off. It seems to me a good way to lose them. But I am intrigued by the new GPS chip, because
that's for runners, isn't it? That means you don't have to take the phone with you, right?
You don't take the damn phone with you.
Yeah.
You just don't, particularly the pluses. They're huge.
Yeah.
And they don't, it's just not a good thing to carry. I know very, very few serious runners who run with phones. And by serious, I don't mean, competitive. I mean just people who run a lot.
Right.
Because they're annoying to run with. So I think that's going to be really quite interesting. The brightness, that's a big deal. In the sun, it is very, very hard to see the current model. And then particularly, again, when you're running, you're kind of bouncing around and you can't focus super well, particularly if you're 48. But I'm looking forward to seeing that.
The
swimming
Nike
is also...
Go ahead.
The swimming is also a really big deal, but one thing they didn't say anything about was biking. And the real question there, honestly, is battery life, because bikers spend a long time on their bikes. You go for a 2-hour ride, that's a short ride.
Yeah.
So, if it's not going to have 6 or 7 hours of battery life...
They didn't say anything about battery life at all.
Not a thing.
Yeah.
Not a thing, which is not a good sign.
Typically, GPS... reduces battery life. Yeah.
So the Garmin, for instance, it powers the GPS down after 30 seconds automatically. Maybe you can change that, but they're basically saying is that if you're not actually running, you should just stop using the GPS because it will eat your battery life so fast. And that's a Garmin 620, 5 to 7 hours. The triathlete versions can
show us again, because that's giant compared to an Apple Watch, right? It's a big watch.
There you go.
Okay.
It's not terrible.
It's a little bit bigger.
And the new ones are basically the same size, possibly a little smaller. This is a year old, 2 years old. Sorry.
What about the Nike version? Because they announced a branded Nike version. What are you laughing at?
Everyone in our Slack discussion was like, "That is the ugliest watch I have ever seen."
Well, it kind of looks like the shoes, I guess. It's a sport model, a sport band, and then it has a dedicated Nike face, I guess.
That's what I don't quite understand. Is it anything more than a face?
In a
different band. I mean, the band.
They wouldn't have new hardware, but they've. It's a second vote on how Apple is willing to let other manufacturers have that exclusives to put exclusive watch faces and exclusive software
Hermes,
on the device.
Hermes bands come with it.
Exactly.
Hermes watch
face. That's the other one.
Yeah.
So the Nike one, speaking as someone who is seriously in the world of athletics, people don't do lifestyle stuff in the same way. You prick the shoes that fit your feet. You don't say, "Oh, I have to have Nikes." And people don't brand themselves in quite the same level.
Yeah, because I run a New Balance because I pronate and they have a better platform for my feet. You don't choose the brand. Right.
And so that's, I mean, it's not that it will probably do badly or anything, but it just, it feels like a bit of a stretch for targeting the sport market.
There is an app, a Nike Plus Run Club app. Remember that Nike Plus was early on something Apple supported with the iPhone and that little tag.
The foot
pod. The foot pod, yeah.
But you had to have special Nike shoes, which were a pain in the butt. Yeah, right. And those things, no one was going to buy the shoes if you don't run in Nikes because they don't fit your feet. So all of this is kind of interesting. I tend to think it's, you know, more not that big a deal, really. It might actually get the watch into some areas, into some outlets that it wasn't sold in before. That could be an interesting.
Get them in the sports stores.
Yeah.
There's also a motivating sayings like, are we running today? Or
just join Strava.
It's Sunday. Let's get out there and run. That's annoying, right? And I can't imagine a serious runner needs that. And
No.
It just comes across as a little bit sarcastic.
Yeah.
Are we running today?
Yeah.
Apparently not. According to HomeKit, you're on the sofa.
It's a little bit like WatchOS's Breathe app. It's like, just stop freaking interrupting me. I have work to do.
I need to breathe. It also has some social elements. You can get, what do they say? Jim's 2 miles ahead of you. Hurry up. That kind of thing.
If Jim is 2 miles ahead of you, you're never going to see him.
Yeah.
If Jim is, 30 seconds ahead of you, maybe. 2 miles, you're talking, 7 to 15 minutes.
By the way, there are other colors besides that yellow and black. Yes. They call it the Volt band. There's a gray and black.
There's a gray and black.
And there's a silver and white.
Gray.
So you're not gray and black and,
Yeah.
All right. There also is a new edition. So the edition watch in the past was the very, very expensive gold.
Oh, they did have a new one. Watch. I didn't hear anything about
that. The new edition is ceramic.
Oh, the ceramic. Okay.
Yeah. $1,249 for the 38mm, $1,299 for the 42mm. You're paying the price to have a white watch. And this is kind of a status symbol, right? Not.
It's so white.
It's as white as you are, Adam.
That really surprised me because I thought that everything else about today's watch announcements was all about how we have figured out why people are buying the Apple Watches and what they're using them for. That we figured that people like them for fitness, so we're going to make it do cool stuff, work well for fitness. And I thought that there was this sort of implied statement over the past year that, yeah, we think that the solid gold $12,000 watch is embarrassing as everybody else thinks it is, so don't worry about it. We're gonna make the stainless steel watch the nice watch from now on. But okay, it's $1,200 instead of $12,000, so you can still have a status watch without looking like you are either a Premier
Stupid
League football player or a recent lottery winner.
Ceramic, though, I've had ceramic watches before. It's a really nice material. It's very lightweight. It's hard. It's much harder than steel, even. It's not.
It is. It is.
Like
it is
plates.
A very. It is a very Herb Tarlick, like a white thing on your. It's not like gold, and it's not like stainless steel, and it's not even like aluminum. But it integrates. You are saying I'm wearing a white belt. I'm wearing white
shoes. It goes
shoes.
With your white
I'm
shoes wearing, and white belt. Yeah.
It's not. It's not
it
the
brittle?
Least tacky color.
What happens when you drop it?
No. Ceramic is very, very tough. I love my. I had a beautiful black ceramic watch that you couldn't scratch, you couldn't damage. It's a tough. It's a great material for wristwatches, and it's light. So it does not shatter. It's not. It's a modern ceramics technology is very interesting, very advanced. But it is white. They don't have any other color. It's got to be old. But, remember, designers often have those white glasses, that shows their designer that and this scarf. And so I'm thinking maybe that's for that set. I don't know.
Maybe it comes with a scarf.
It's the Johnny Ive White Room edition.
Hermes. It should come with a scarf. For the
Hermes should come with a scarf.
All right.
The nicest announcement, I think, from a personal point of view, though, is they're retaining the first edition. This is the second edition watch, and now the first edition watch is now down to 269, was it? Which makes it attainable, at least within a nine iron of the cost of a premium fitness watch. I think that the health stuff that Apple's been doing is some of the most important work that they've ever been doing. And I like the signs that they are aware that not everybody, you're not, it's no good to, if you're trying to help out only people who can afford luxury items, that's like the scenario of Gattaca or something.
Here's the,
you need to make things that are affordable.
Here's their Apple's battery life page. And they're saying these were, our goal for battery life was 18 hours after an overnight charge. This is for both Apple Watch Series 1 and Series 2, which tells me that the battery life is the same. For
Series 1 has a new dual-core processor, too.
Right.
It's worth noting that. So it should be faster, which will be nice.
All devices were pre-production, Apple Watch Series 1, Series 2, pre-release software. All battery life based on all-day battery life based on 18 hours of the following use, 90 time checks, 90 notifications, 45 minutes of app use, and a 30-minute workout with music playback via Bluetooth. That sounds like a fairly typical.
And never using the GPS even once.
Let's see what they say about workout. Let's see what they say about GPS. Using GPS without a phone workout time. 5 hours.
5 hours. Okay.
That's pretty typical.
Totally,
yeah.
That's totally legit. I said runners, 5 hours is usually good enough. Bikers is where that starts to fall down.
You know, the problem, and I have this problem with all sports fitness bands, is that biking, rowing, a lot of the weightlifting, the exercises I do really don't register on these devices.
I think most of the serious bicyclists use bike computers that are actually mounted on the thing anyway.
Exactly.
So I'm not sure if they're going to be really enticed by bike features.
Yeah.
What I've found in seeing the community around here is that there's a lot of people who are primarily runners or they're triathletes, but you know they only do one try a year or something like that, and sort of they don't want to spend big bucks on the bike computer as well. And and the biking, the watch is actually, my wife does this, for instance. She goes on these big Wednesday women's rides with 30 or 40 other women, and everyone gets home and immediately posts to Strava.
Right.
Because that's sort of the high I got home okay.
Oh, interesting.
Because there's sometimes they're breaking off at different points to
that's interesting.
Where they parked and everything. Yeah. And so it's a very big social thing in that respect. And so it's not so much about, I need to know exactly how fast I'm going at all times or what my maximum speed was or what my power output was. No one's using power meters or anything like that. It's just about recording your ride. And so, the watch is usually fine for that. And that's why I think, Andy's right. The serious cyclists will have serious bike computers. They'll have Garmin Edges, things like that.
And GPS will record what you want, which is distance and time.
Yeah.
And that's all you need. I mean, it's not like you care about pedal strokes or anything like
that. Then you have a Garmin Edge.
Yeah.
And that's really, you'll actually have a power meter that will hook into your computer and things like that.
Charge time for the new watch is about an hour and a half to 80%, 2 hours to 100%. That sounds faster. But I just charge it overnight, so I might be wrong on that.
Doesn't everyone? Yeah.
Yeah. They are giving you that information now on the website. So that's good news. And what else? And Pokemon Go. How could I have forgotten? You can play Pokemon Go on your Apple Watch too.
Well, I have to say, I was on vacation with my 8 and 10 year old nephews in late July, and we played a lot of Pokemon Go. This is a great thing to do with 8 and 10 year olds.
Oh, yeah.
And this was in late July, and the Pokemon Go app was pretty weak, frankly. And I will say that the kinds of things they were showing off on the watch would be a huge boon. I mean, it was so annoying to deal with the phone constantly.
I agree.
And I couldn't even take the damn thing for a run and have it register accurately. So it was nice. It sounds like they're going to be using either the GPS chip or at least the watch accelerometer to be recording this kind of stuff.
Interesting, Andy, that you mentioned that they've kind of backed off on the gold. I don't see a I'm looking in the wrong place. I don't see a gold edition on the Series 2.
Maybe you just have to ask.
Maybe you have to know somebody. I don't know. The most expensive is the ceramic at $1,299 for the 42-millimeter. They are no longer offering the $18,000 Apple Watch. That was probably a bad idea from day one.
Yeah, I think that was just embarrassing. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was a subject of intense debate inside Apple before the launch. I'm looking at the front page of Apple right now, and you see Apple Watch Series 2, the big graphic, all of them like coming out of the water like Esther Williams in formation, and you see everything but gold.
Here's the good news. If you bought a gold, collector's edition, right?
But that's now we're going to see like the competition between those who are overly concerned about what other people think. Do you want people to think that you could not afford the $12,000 gold watch, or do you want people to think that you have last year's style?
The thing that was always funny about that was that at $18,000, you're competing with the watches that talk about how you're going to hand it down to your kids.
Right.
You know, that this is
not
this is something.
Watch. Yeah.
Yeah. But an Apple Watch, I mean, everyone knew that it was going to be obsolete within X amount of time.
Right.
And now it's 18 months. That was the answer.
Yep. Yeah. Should somebody upgrade if they have the existing Apple Watch?
All depends on the GPS chip, honestly.
For swimming and GPS, if you're missing those two features, but frankly, if it's been in the drawer for the past year, it's probably not because of the lack of GPS and the lack of swimming features. Right. So I don't think you're losing anything.
And that's something Apple should probably show some concern about. IDC yesterday released some sales numbers for the Apple Watch. Apple does not release sales numbers, so whatever IDC says is projection. But they say that the Apple Watch is losing ground as the basic wearables gain ground, a 48% drop in Apple Watch sales year over year. Now, maybe that's because people are waiting for Apple Watch 2. Fitbit is dominating. In fact, Fitbit has grown 28%.
Yeah, I think the most important thing that teaches us is that whoever is buying a Fitbit is telling people, oh, my God, you have to have this. It's great. People who are buying Apple Watches are the people who are excited about it, and then they're either not wearing them anymore or, once again, they're not using them at the office in such a way that anybody is asking, hey, did you just do that on your watch? Can I do that on my watch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I will say is that the addition of the GPS and the swimming features do mean that if you were using an Apple Watch and you're considering buying the next Garmin or Polar or Nike sport watch, you might say, I'm going to put that money towards an Apple Watch and just have one watch that I can wear all the time. So that is finally the option there that Apple may improve a bit on.
We are talking about the Apple event. There's lots more to talk about, including the new iPhones, but we're going to take a little break. Adam Engst is here from Tidbits at TIDBITS.com, a free Apple newsletter that's a must-read for anybody who watches this show, for instance, but also your support is welcome. And being a paying Tidbits subscriber means you help Adam and his team get their work done. They also have those great in-control manuals. And I'm sure somebody's scribbling away on the new in-control for the Apple Watch 2 and the iPhone 7. They will be if they're not already.
I was going to say, take control of Sierra and iOS 10. Well underway.
Yeah.
We were looking to see if there were going to be any Mac announcements at all. There were absolutely none.
None. Zip.
That was our...
Well, what that means is there's going to be, I think there's got to be an October event with iPad and Mac.
Yeah. We're just hoping they'd give us a date. We always like dates.
Right.
Makes our lives easier.
Yeah, not even a nod.
Yeah.
They gave Sia more time than they gave Macintosh. I think that the new Messages app, for instance, for iOS 10, and which will be kind of mirrored on the watch, that by itself is... I could use some in-control manual information on that. There's a lot of hidden stuff in there. Renee Ritchie had explained to me how to change the... make the thing big and to get the backgrounds. It's not obvious. You have to figure it out.
We had a Take Control of Messages book a while back. Honestly, it didn't sell well. You know, it's one of those things where it turns out people weren't that interested in learning how to take control of messages.
or they figured it out.
Well, yeah, and I think the new stuff is confusing.
Yeah.
But the other thing that we've discovered, and this is, I sort of hate to say this because I think your audience is probably a little different than our core book buying audience. But we just did a survey, and just everything we've heard, people say really not interested in these features and messages.
Interesting.
People do not give a damn about big emoji or dropping balloons or things like that. They just want to use it for text messaging.
Wow.
So that's, you know, that's my audience, which is probably skewing a bit older, a bit more quote unquote serious. You know, the young folks out there are probably saying, I really want my big emoji.
I thought it was the soccer mom messages. I didn't think it was young people who are using Snapchat anyway. I thought it was people like me and soccer moms and the middle age folks who are getting it. And I'm being very generous to myself, middle aged. Unless I plan to live at 118, which I do. Andy Anaka also here from the Chicago Sun-Times, and it's great to have you once again. You decided not to pursue an invitation to the event. Do you regret not getting to play with this stuff? Because that's the one thing you're missing.
Not really. I don't care about sharing earwax with my compatriots in the journalism industry. I mean, it's not what I do. There are other journalists who need to have as much data on day one as possible. I'm going to spend tonight writing as opposed to furiously typing as I'm doing this podcast. Right. And I have much better. I'm much more alert today than I would have been had I been spending the last 12 hours in airports.
Yeah. So. Well, and the good news is, for the first time in a while, Apple's making these available pretty quickly, only 10 days after the event. It's been a couple of years since they've done that. So you won't have to wait too long to get a hands-on in the privacy of your own home, if you know what I mean. Our show today, maybe you don't. Our show today brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Get your hands on this sucker. Oh, my goodness. I love the Ring Video Doorbell. We've got one on the front door of our house. And the beauty of it is I can see, when somebody rings the doorbell, not only can I see them, I can talk to them. It's a doorbell with a HD camera, nice wide-angle lens, plus a speaker and a microphone. In fact, it's got motion sensors, too, so if somebody just walks up to the front door and then decides to back off, I can also see that. When the delivery guy comes with a package, in fact, I'm expecting a package I need to sign for today, I could just I'm in the bath. Can you just leave it here? I'll sign in the air or something. Sometimes that works. Ring.com/MacBreak. Right now, they've got some pretty good deals on the Ring of Security bundles they're offering, because there's more than just the Ring Video Doorbell. They've got the original Ring Doorbell with a year-long battery for people without wired doorbells. And then the Pro, which is a slimmer model that doesn't have the battery, so that's for wired doorbells only. That's what I have. I actually think the Pro is a great idea. And it's a slightly higher quality 1080p camera instead of 720p. But you also can buy the Ring Stick-Up Cam, which is like a Ring Video Doorbell minus the doorbell. So you can use it to cover areas that the doorbell doesn't, like the sides and backs of your house. And it's wireless when you get this solar panel that works with the Ring Stick-Up Cam to keep it working and charged all day and all night. Very sweet stuff. It's weather resistant. It's wire free. You can put it anywhere. You can hear and see and speak. Hey, what are you doing in my rose bushes? Get out of there. Get out of my rose bushes. You also can get the Ring sign, the illuminated solar security sign that deters intruders before they get to your door. It lights up at night thanks to the solar panels on it. Just awesome. And there's even the Ring chime. You can plug into any standard power outlet. It will ring when your doorbell rings, just like your chimes in your hallway, but it's a great way to extend those doorbells out to, you know, workshops or garages or places where you wouldn't normally hear the doorbell. So pick your bundle and get up to $150 off right now when you go to ring.com/MacBreak. This is a great gift for parents. If you have older parents who are a little nervous about security, you know what happens as we get older? My mom doesn't get out. To have the stick-up cam watching her side, alley by her house, and the Ring doorbell, let her know when somebody comes to the door. That is just awesome. And it's easy to install. Ring.com/MacBreak. Up to $150 off right now. And we thank Ring for their support of MacBreak Weekly. All right, Apple's event. Let's see. Tim Cook, very poised, did a great job. No mention at WWDC of iPhone security, of why they were fighting the FBI. That's all water under the bridge now. They didn't mention privacy and security at all. I guess they felt like they'd explained iOS 10 and Sierra, and we're going to let what they've said stand. People get the message that Apple is all about privacy. I don't think they have to belabor that point.
Yeah, and also they're very, very wise at understanding how media works, that if they were to, let's say, if they were to make a joke, for instance, about Samsung's problems with the Note 7, that's what people would be talking and writing about. If they had started off by talking about their quote, ongoing war with governments about privacy, or their problems with the EU, that would have been one of the big things people were talking about. This way, we're all focusing on the actual hardware that they're trying to have a good sales quarter with.
Yeah.
And the headphone jacks.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get to that one in a little bit. By the way, I remember seeing pictures, Renee Ritchie and Marcus Brownlee posted on Twitter this morning of the badge. And now I realize those were piano black badges. Should have realized Apple was trying to tell us something with those media badges. Let's see. After the Apple Watch, did we cover everything that they mentioned with the Apple Watch?
I think so.
Let's talk about... They mentioned education and their partnership with the federal government on
There were some early announcements, sort of, you know, stuff when they were going through Pokemon Go and Mario coming to the iPhone.
Mario was huge. I didn't mention Mario. That's huge.
Yeah. And they got I'm not even going to attempt his name, but they got the guy who I guess created Mario,
Shigeru Miyamoto, created Mario, and he spoke in Japanese most of the time. Yeah.
He was great, and
Super
I think
Mario
that,
Run. It's a running, you know, endless runner to style app. Somebody said looks a lot like Sonic the Hedgehog because he's gathering coins. Mario.
And that's the first time we've heard any mention of any of the iWork apps in a keynote in years.
That's true too. Oh, yeah.
They do collaboration as part of the
educations thing.
Wait a minute, are you saying this collaboration is not new, Adam?
Oh well, no, it's a new one, but they've done what did they call it?
The last update was live? 3 years ago. It was 2013.
They did one well before that. I remember it never got out of beta.
Oh,
They announced it at Macworld, and I remember complaining to the product manager because it seemed thoroughly featureless. And he's like, "It's not for people like you." I was like, "Yeah, people who want to collaborate." and that one never made it out of beta. After they made the big splash about it at the keynote. Yeah, then there's the stuff they did via iCloud, and we'll see. You know, they glossed over it so quickly, but real-time collaboration needs two big things to be successful. One, you need some level of simultaneous commenting, that you need to know, be able to communicate with the people who are screwing with your presentation in real time. You know, how do you tell them to don't touch that? So that's one thing. And then the other thing is you need to know who's doing what. So, you know, this is a common thing in, you know, Google Docs with revision history, or way back when in some of the other, you know, the early real-time editors where people would be typing in different colors so that you can tell who's doing what. And again, also having some level of version control so that you can see that, you know, yeah, Sally just did that and that was wrong, so you're going to need to revert it. You know, so we'll see how the details really work once they get this stuff out. But I am not holding my breath because Apple has never done a good job on collaboration.
So we neglected to mention that in the Mario Run. And by the way, I think that's Nintendo's first game to operate on non-Nintendo hardware. Nintendo said that they wanted to do this. They also said that none of the games would be... the existing Mario games, they'd all be reimagined new games, which is a shame because I think there's a lot of people who would love to play Mario Brothers on the iPhone. I don't think any reason you couldn't, right? Or what is it, Mario?
You just get a game emulator and sideload it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true too. They talked a little bit about the App Store before they mentioned the Watch. 500 million. What was it? It was a billion apps. What was it? It was a billion. I forgot. A billion iPhones. It was a
140 billion apps downloaded.
Wow.
Yeah. 500,000 games on the store. Most popular gaming device in the world. 140 billion App Store downloads.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The one thing that actually was also interesting about the Super Mario Run was they said it would have a set price. No in-app purchases, and which watching all the apps in the App Store go to free plus, let's see how we can hit you up for in-app purchases was a nice change.
I agree. Not a freemium app, but just to buy it and use it forever. I like that. All right. Now we move on to the new iPhone. And by the way, if you were watching Twitter carefully, you might have noted that Apple scooped itself. Somebody at Apple inadvertently pre-tweeted the announcement. And everything that we were to find out a few minutes later was released earlier. Now, I see it says pre-order now, and I think that that means that not only did they pre-tweet it for today, they meant to tweet this on Friday because the pre-orders aren't available till Friday. So, somebody's in.
They're trying to get out of the office early. It was like right before the Labor Day weekend. No one's sticking around after 3:30 in the afternoon.
Let's just push it. No one will see it.
The ghost of Steve Jobs just threw an iPhone at someone. So,
so let's talk about the new iPhones. And by the way, Apple's store was down during all this, giving some people some thought that maybe we'd be able to buy this now, but no. They just closed the store because they want to mess with
Someone was saying that they, I don't know if this is still true, but they had to close the store back, you know, originally because it was all based on web objects.
Right.
And they actually had to shut it down to put in new SKUs.
Now they just do it to excite everybody, get everybody.
Yes, really.
Here's the picture on the front page at Apple.com. This is 7, and it, you know, maybe it's just great photography. They're good at product shots. But it does look very pretty and sexy. How changed is this, though, from the iPhone 6S or 6S Plus?
Really big. It's the first change they've made to the home button since version 1. Now it's no longer mechanical. It's now haptically based. And you can imagine ways that they can sort of add to that in the future if they're making this into a completely solid-state device. The first time they're promising waterproofness, the iPhone has always been really, really hugely water-resistant, not to the point where they could make a promise that they would have to back up in case someone did get their phone destroyed by water. But now they're saying, no, we're saying IP67, you are absolutely going to be able to splash on this and it'll work just fine. The CPU bump is significant, as it always is. On Android devices, you often sort of look at a CPU bump kind of skeptically because, okay, that means that certain benchmarks will run faster, but how is that going to translate into a better experience? With Apple, the way that they integrate the hardware and the software and the OS, it really does make everything work better, including the camera, which is the next really big, huge thing for everything. I like the fact that Phil Schiller finally, I think for the first time on the stage of the keynote, made a point of exactly how much is going on behind the scenes of that lens. It's a camera module, and the camera module sends back to the CPU. Here is a JPEG that we collected from this sensor. No, it's really doing, I think he said 100 billion calculations in like a fraction of a second, including doing things like sampling several different images and combining them in different ways, doing different kinds of color correction, identifying faces, identifying people in there. And a lot of cameras do this to one extent or the other, but I don't know any other phone platform that takes such a big leap into the idea of a synthetic photograph. I mean, you tap a button once and it takes a beautiful picture, but it does so much behind the scenes to make sure that picture comes out great. And the two lenses that you get on the iPhone 7 Plus, that's great, but you also get that same sort of improved imaging on the iPhone 7 Nothing. You also are adding, by the way, optical image stabilization on the iPhone 7, which used to be an exclusive to the 6 Plus. They are talking about a camera that has I wrote down the words that they use. That's not a standard that I recognize to explain that they call it wide color capture. So it'll, according to the keynote data, that it will have a much better gradations of color, much better sensitivity to shifts and stuff like that, and much better, which translates into better skin tones and stuff like that.
Isn't the wide color stuff related to the larger color gamut they've been talking about, like on the iMac monitor? There's a new Hollywood-based standard or something for them?
Yeah. That's why I'm trying to get the actual name of the standard. They're talking about two separate things during the keynote. They're talking about changes they've made to the screen to make it capable of better color reproduction, and then they've also talked about differences they've made to the camera. So I'm just trying in my own head not to get those two confused, just in case they're using an actual standard that they can promise on the screen, but on the camera they just found a trick they can use that will have great effects, but they can't tell us what it is.
I was really, really stunned when Phil Schiller said that each photo there was 100 billion operations being performed behind the scenes. Which,
what?
Yeah, it was sort of like, really? 100 billion?
We're talking about 1 + 1 = 2. We're not just talking about
really? how are you calculating that? Isn't it like the number of stars? No, it's okay.
100. So here's the color palette. You've got, we have to say bye-bye to space gray, which was, I think, never a beloved color. But we do have still the rose gold and regular gold. We've got a silver. The jet black is the shiny piano black, and just black, which I would call matte black. And if you look at this picture without all the fancy lighting and, you know, glossy reflections, they look pretty much like the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. The sizes are roughly the same. I'd have to get out a ruler and measure the difference.
I haven't compared yet either, but I think they're pretty similar.
Pretty close. 138 grams for the smaller, 188 grams for the larger one. 4.7 versus 5.5
The real question is cases. Are the dimensions sufficiently similar that you need to buy a new case?
I'm thinking Apple said an all new range of cases and batteries. That's what Tim Cook said at the end, that are Phil did. So I have a feeling that might be, you know, it doesn't take much of a change to make those old cases obsolete.
Well, remember that these don't have phone jacks in them, and the iPhone 7 Plus has two lenses. So
that's true. That,
by definition, it's going to
need a new case. The wide color display, they're calling P3. Is that the industry standard you were talking
yes.
about?
Yes. P3. I think so.
Dual domain pixels for wide viewing angles. No more of that dark trench or whatever. I don't understand some of the things they say here.
I was gonna say, I love some of this terminology. I mean, I'm sure it's correct terminology and everything, but it's more like wider viewing.
No blue, by the way. We'd heard rumors there might be a blue version. No blue version, unless they announce it later for China or other markets. The A10 chip, they're now dubbing A10 Fusion. Not sure how that's different from just an A9.
Because it runs hot.
Fusion. Well, I would guess what they're talking about is the fact that it's a quad-core processor. But like many Android phones do this as well, which is that they don't engage all the processors. Actually, so do the Intel chips on the desktop and laptop. They don't engage all the processors unless necessary. They can use slower speed, lower capability processors to preserve battery life.
Yeah.
And so I would guess that's what Fusion means. It's a quad-core 64-bit architecture with a M10 motion coprocessor inside. In the early days of the motion coprocessor, that was a separate chip, I think. But now it's now it's in the dip.
Yeah, that was another constant track during this keynote. They're time and time again referring to chips that they manufactured themselves, they designed themselves. It underscores something that Renee, for instance, keeps telling us, reminding us of time and time again, that Apple is one of the biggest chip manufacturers in the world, and also tracks with stuff that I keep hearing about chip engineers who their dream is not to work for Intel. Their dream is to do important work and wear sandals and a turtleneck sweater in Cupertino because they're doing some really super interesting stuff, which is the stuff you can do when you're not trying to satisfy 100 million hardware clients. You're just trying to satisfy one really laser-focused product line.
Yeah.
So I just to go back very slightly, I did just confirm that the weight at the size of the iPhone 6S and 7 are the same.
Oh, really?
Exactly the same. So the only real difference is going to be the like the headphone jack and the dual camera things in terms of certain cases. The new ones are like 4 to 5 grams lighter.
Okay, interesting.
So just a little bit. Just a little bit.
You know
bit lighter.
That headphone jack? I knew that weighed a lot.
It was all the weight was in the headphone jack. It was gold plated and gold is heavy.
Let's see. As we continue on, we're just going to run through the spec sheet. Might as well. 12-megapixel front camera with f/1.8 aperture. That's a fairly wide aperture.
That's one of the biggest things you can do for a mobile camera. Give it a wider aperture because that prevents the camera from having to go to the higher ISOs, which destroy image quality. Just by comparison, one of the biggest pre-buzz items about the new Moto series of phones is the new co-developed with Hasselblad, a full like camera back. You could snap onto the back of it that had its own image sensor, an actual optical zoom lens and a flash and everything like that. And I haven't used it yet, but I've been talking to people who have. And the minimum f-stop of that is f/3.5.
Wow.
So yes, it's nice to have a larger image sensor. It's nice to have a real glass lens, but who cares? Because it has to go to super high ISOs to make it even work. So there are people who have used it are saying that it doesn't even necessarily take better pictures than the Motorola's built-in camera. Mm-hmm. So going to a faster aperture in that device is a big, big deal.
The f/1.8 is only for the 28 millimeter wide-angle lens. The telephoto lens on the iPhone 7 Plus. will be F2.8. Now, that's not uncommon.
That's not uncommon, and also it's. I'm really looking forward to the briefing I get on the camera features of this phone, because there's so much they can do by having two image sensors on this device. For one thing, when you have a tighter telephoto lens, it's much, much harder to get a smaller aperture. But nonetheless, even if you are shooting with that telephoto lens, it can still collect image data from the wide-angle super low-light lens and use that to correct imperfections in the lens you're actually using. So you're actually taking the picture certainly from the telephoto lens, but it's all the image processor saying, oh, there's a lot of detail. There's no detail in this black area. Well, according to the wide angle version of this, there's actually a bit of a shadow here, and that's actually noise. It's not detail, so we can smooth that over. There's a million things they can do by combining data from two different image sensors and two different lenses.
They will have a smooth gradient of zoom between the 28 millimeter and the 56 yeah. millimeter, but that's optical. You will also be able to switch from one to the other just with a touch of a button. By the way, telephoto is not really the right name for that, because it's a 28 millimeter is the standard iPhone lens. That's fairly common wide angle for most camera phones. The quote telephoto lens really is more of a normal lens. It's a 56 millimeters. So, I mean, it's telephoto for a camera phone, but it's not. They right. don't think you're going to be going to sporting events and getting a picture of the quarterback's
head. I'm not a photo guy at all. So, can someone tell me whether or not this is going to be better for macro photography?
I don't see how it necessarily would.
Yeah,
it's unrelated. I think you'd probably want to get one of those Olaclips or some. Yeah. Some form of macro lens to improve.
Good. Now I don't have to buy the 7 Plus.
Do you have an Olaclip? Really, do you use an Olaclip on your iPhone now? Or
I don't. It's more just that I really like taking close-ups. I love stuffing my
camera. And you're able to do that with your existing iPhone pretty well?
Enough.
Yeah.
I do want to get an Olaclip or something like that, but it's more just that's sort of actually I've been putting off that purchase because if the new camera was going to do fabulous macro right. photography, then I wasn't going to buy a separate clip. Plus, who knows, whether the Olaclip clip will fit.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's an optical issue, not something you can fix in software. So I think they really need different optics to make that possible. They do claim optical zooms 2x because that's just you're flipping from wide angle to telephoto. Digital zoom up to 10x on the dual lens camera, the iPhone 7 Plus. The 7, of course, just has one lens. OIS, though, in both models, that's a big improvement. The iPhone 6S did not have optical image stabilization.
Yes.
They're going to have now, if two LEDs for flash were good, four LEDs has got to be twice as good. But they did do something which I thought was very interesting. He said that they will be able to monitor flickering in the room. Modern low-power lamps like fluorescents and LEDs have a refresh rate. They actually imperceptibly flicker, and that can interact with a camera. And so sensitivity, that's interesting. I've not noticed it makes a difference. I mean, I haven't been very unhappy with previous iPhone, which didn't have that flicker detection, but we'll see if that makes a difference. Auto HDR, noise reduction, exposure control, body and face detection, burst mode, timer mode, all the stuff you'd expect. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also going to be significant that they've, in iOS 10, now developers have access to camera raw images. So you can store an actual Adobe standard DNG file. So as much as improved as the color gamut supposedly is, it also means that you'll get access to actual, like, uncompressed, original, unmodified data from the sensor instead of something that's been compressed a little bit, which is always that gives you that little extra bit of yardage that will let you find
you need that push to get over the edge.
Yeah.
I mean, it is pretty significant. It also really does appeal to people who are actual real serious photographers. And that's anything that'll get them to buy that new phone or sign up for a yearly subscription is good stuff in their pocket.
So the other thing they talked about that was really interesting in the keynote, which is not available out of the box or on day one, is this new depth effect that will be another option along with panorama and square and all of that. No, it's portrait is what they're going to call it.
Portrait, right. They specifically called it portrait, which meant that they called it explicitly called it this is a sneak peek of a bonus thing that we challenged our engineers to create.
Extra credit.
which sort of indicated that we really, really hope this would be ready to demonstrate, but it is totally not ready to demonstrate yet.
It isn't at, it's not, right? We won't get this right away.
They didn't even provide a lot. We managed to cobble together a functioning something so that we could show it to you in purpose. No, they were only able to show us some photos of the camera actually doing this. So the idea being that if you put this in X, and that's the name of the mode. The mode is portrait. You can have a picture in which the foreground is sharp and the background is blurred out in a synthetic manner. And it's doing that by getting data from those two different lenses. So because they're separated on a horizontal plane slightly, you can calculate certain depth information, and it's also basically it's calculating a depth map of sorts, so that useful enough that once the image processor also tells the camera app that, oh, by the way, this shape here appears to be a face and a human, and so the rest must be the background. It's enough that they can make an educated guess as what's the foreground, what's the background, how much they should blur to make this effect convincing. And the demo photos that they showed were actual photos, they said, taken with this effect, and it does look quite convincing, even though it does certainly seem to fall short of what a lot of people are sort of dreaming about, which is to manually choose the depth of field of what you're actually aiming at. Phil made a couple of technical errors in his statements. One of them is that as you're taking the picture, it will show you a preview of what the background blur will look like, and even an SLR can't do that. Well, yes, it can. It has actually a special button called DOF preview, so that you can see see how much you're blurring the background. Because sometimes you use that for effect. You want to be able to if you take a picture of somebody in Kenmore Square in Boston. You want people to know that big sign in the background is the Citgo sign. You don't want to be so blurred out that it's just sort of a white and red sort of squarish thing. But even that alone, it's very much the way that Apple would, I think, put in that feature, which is to not add another slider that lets you make a manual adjustment, but we are going to decide for you what you would want to see with this sort of a feature and let you get at it by just tapping one button.
The other thing that I'll be curious about is that because they're calling it portrait, and certainly they only showed it working with people, is if you will be able to use it for depth of field effects on anything else.
Right.
If it's actually just using that body detection, for instance, to be able to determine who's there.
Well, that's one of the fascinating things about the whole camera demo. It's sort of like when they mentioned that they have a haptic feedback inside the home button. They're showing off specific features that make this more useful. Like, hey, good. Hey, look, now you've got like a really good zoom between 1x and 2x, and you don't have to do the fakery really until you get beyond 2x. Hey, look, we got this really great thing for taking pictures of people that will look really, really cool. But the thing is, once you have hardware that has two lenses in it, that means that every possible trick you can do that requires two separate lenses of two separate focal lengths and two separate image sensors is now possible. So they can really add core camera optical features just by pushing out a system update. So now it's not just if you're looking for the camera taking better pictures, you're not just waiting for a new piece of hardware coming out in September that you will have to buy. It means that you'll be paying close attention during WWDC because it's very, very likely that the sort of the image quality you're taking with your existing iPhone 7 Plus will be improved once you're running iOS 11.
By the way, it might have been a little disingenuous of Phil to imply that it was extra credit work for the engineers because as Rogue Voice is pointing out to us in the chat room, April of last year, Apple bought an Israeli company called Lynx, a camera module maker promising DSLR-like mobile performance, doing exactly the kind of thing that so maybe instead of extra credit, it was more like we bought a company.
I remember their technology wasn't just about having like blurred backgrounds. It's also using all this data to figure out where is the noise in this picture and how do we eliminate it. So you can do it to make things sharper. You can do it to increase the color gamut of the image. Like I said, it's really exciting to think about what Apple could do with this with iOS 11, let alone a new piece of hardware.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the cameras. And I have some sample images, but we'll also want to talk a little bit about headphone jacks or the lack thereof and how those AirPods might really work. I have to point out we had bingo cards for the keynote thanks to Megan Maroney, and both Megan and I achieved bingo about halfway through the event. That was a lot of fun. But no Angela Arendt, no blue iPhone. We did get Johnny Ive. I was a little surprised to hear from Sir Johnny. He was in the audience. He wasn't invisible in the he wasn't visible in the video, though. The video had no white room. It was all in black. And as we know, Johnny's contract prohibits him from appearing on black screens. We'll have more in just a moment. But first, a word from Texture. If you like magazines, and who doesn't? I mean, I think some really interesting articles come out in magazines like Wired and The New Yorker and Vanity Fair and Rolling Stone. Every month, there's at least one or two I want to read. Not to mention those great photo essays in the National Geographic, recipes from those wonderful cooking magazines like Real Simple. I mean, I could go on and on. I love magazines, but you're not going to subscribe to 20 different magazines. Think of the clutter. And going out in the newsstand and buying an issue just for one article, like that cover story article on Rolling Stone this month on James Corden, that's just prohibitively expensive. But Texture is such a great solution. Texture is like Netflix, but for magazines. You get up to 200 of the best magazines, including Consumer Reports and People and Us and Entertainment Weekly and National Geographic, on your iPad, on your iPhone, on your tablet, so that you can read them anywhere. And you get every page that's on the newsstand issue, plus back issues, plus bonus content you can't get anywhere else, like video. That's not in print. And, of course, the editorial staff at Texture put together some really good things like the new and noteworthy and the top stories section, so you can quickly find stories you'll be interested in. And you get all the content from the world's most in-demand publications right on your iPad, including National Geographic. Here's another nice feature that I really like. Besides reading Boy's Life and Billboard, two magazines I probably wouldn't buy, but, I like to read them for old time's sake. It's fun. I used to be a DJ. I like to know what's on the Hot 100. You'll also, if you subscribe to Texture right now, be able to run it on 5 different devices. That makes it easy to share with your family. So one subscription, and, for instance, we're going on vacation soon. I want magazines to read on the plane, as I'm traveling around the world. I would love to do this. So fortunately, Lisa has a subscription to Texture, so I'll be sharing her Texture on my iPad. Texture.com/twit. Sign up today. You'll get a free trial, immediate access to all the best magazines, including back issues and bonus video content. And it's free for a limited time at texture.com/twit. Give it a try today. I can only say I just love it. I mean, I just really love it. And boy, when you're about to get on an airplane, not having to go to the airport bookstore and buy a stack of magazines you're just going to leave on the plane, that's nice. We're having fun today talking about Apple's big announcements. You know, it's a drought as we lead up to these announcements. And then there's just a waterfall, a cascade of information that we're trying to absorb. Fortunately, we have two of the best in the business to help absorb it. With us, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times, our regular on Mac Break Weekly. And filling in for Renee Ritchie, who's busy getting his hands on the new Apple Watch bands. In his place, we've got Adam Engst from Tidbits.com. And the best Apple newsletter of all time, and the oldest
that quote. It's just
of all
saying.
Time, yeah, all time best. It's great to have you both, especially to have a runner on Adam to talk a little bit about that watch. Because the thing that always gets me on the Apple Watch is it's just this kind of very diverse array of kind of completely different features. Yes. And it feels like it's each of them is targeted at a different slice. And they think if I could just do the one thing runners want, or I could just do the one thing game players want, or I could just do the one thing and then, swimmers want, and then hope to kind of slice those markets up and succeed because of that. And while they're struggling a little bit, I do think the new Series 2 looks pretty compelling. Maybe not for runners, I don't know, but for normal people.
So I don't want to derail this, but we just got news. Apple has changed the macOS Sierra page to have a release date of September 20th.
Whoa, that's great news. So September 13th for iOS 10, that's when it becomes official, even on older iPhones and iPads. And September 20th I'll be in Paris. I wonder what my bandwidth will be like. We can be, you'll be able to update your Macintosh to OS.
It'll probably be faster if you just have somebody FedEx you a flash key.
You're absolutely right. But you got, I don't know. I haven't been using the beta. I had a bad experience a couple of betas ago, and I thought I'm just going to wait and be a good boy and just wait till they release. Adam, have you been playing with Sierra?
I have. We do have take control of upgrading to Sierra in progress, as well as Sierra Crash Course Book done by Shally McFarland, ex of Macworld, and so we've been pushing this stuff a lot. And I haven't been running it on my main machine, but on my laptop, it's been pretty interesting. Siri, obviously, the big interesting thing. And, man, optimized storage has us tied up in knots. The interface is from the moon. It's a black box that just, there's all sorts of weird little gotchas here and there.
Are you talking about the new file system, APFS?
No. Optimized storage is a big feature in Sierra where it tries to offload your content to
iCloud.
And so
I don't like
all
that.
Sorts of there's all sorts of it's not in some ways a terrible idea. You know, you're like talking a small MacBook Air, but it's just thing after thing, all these questions, and we still actually don't have answers to a lot of them.
Yeah, so see, I don't like black boxes on my data. I don't want that.
This is a cloudy big box in the sky somewhere. And your stuff goes up there, and like we don't yet know whether or not what happens when something you're syncing your desktop and documents folder, and optimized storage kicks in and deletes old documents from your disk. What's the time machine connection there?
Right.
We just don't know.
It's not like Apple has never lost data. I mean,
I was going to say. I mean, Apple does a lot of things well. There's only one area in which I advise people to actively not trust Apple to do something correctly, and that involves management of your personal files. Yeah. Whether it's music, or whether it's iCloud, or whether it's anything, count on at some point something going missing and you not knowing how to get it back. That's just I still haven't enabled iCloud Drive on any of my real Macs yet because I don't need it. It doesn't offer any unique features that are useful to me. But more than anything else, I'm absolutely certain there's going to be a time, either the first day or the first year, where I'm looking for a file and then some Apple piece of code decided that I didn't want it or need it, and I don't have it.
Well, and so, I mean, I just hit this. So the one of the big features is desktop and documents folder syncing, which is kind of cool. So, you know, you turn this on and it moves your desktop and document folders to the iCloud so that they can be synced among all your different computers and access them from your iPhones and everything. Sounds neat. But it really does move them. So, for instance, I wanted to put something in my documents folder and I went to my home folder. And it was gone.
That's scary.
My whole documents folder. I mean, I almost had a heart attack. Couldn't Apple have hard linked it into this iCloud connection so it was just in two places at once or something like that? You know, it was very troubling. And then if you turn it off, you get these series of really wacky dialogues that make you feel like you're going to lose data. I'm not real happy about it as a user experience at this point in time. And we still have some betas to go, possibly. You know, who knows what's going to happen. But I'm just saying that's the thing. If you're installing Sierra and you're asked to turn this stuff on during the installer, don't.
They got 2 weeks to fix everything, so I'm sure we're worried for nothing.
For extra credit, it's going to not delete any data.
I am actually really excited about APFS, the new Apple file system, but that's not out till January.
Right, that's deep waters. They're not doing it until 2017, and maybe not even January.
And that'll be scary. But once perfected, that brings modern file system technology, a la ZFS, to a file system that's more than two decades old. Yeah. It's a much needed update from Apple, and I look forward to that. And that's all about data integrity. That's about the exact opposite of mystery data, you know. So.
Yeah, we really are back in Mac OS 9 days. Remember that it was the least Mac OS was the least reliable, least stable OS in the world because it did not use any of the modern techniques for memory and app management. So it just kept having to patch and make do the old architecture that they've been using since the very first Macintosh. This is why a lot of the file stuff that we're dealing with right now is such a bear, because we're still using an operating system that was conceived and implemented before the modern way of managing files and having many hands on a file at the same time, doing this sort of intense edits and having multiple parts of files and having multiple backups, multiple security levels. Once that's hardwired into the operating system, and it really is as simple as an application pushing a button saying, I would like this file to do that, as opposed to, we have to be able to drive up a mountain on a bicycle wheel. We can't change. We're stuck with bicycle wheels, so we got to figure out a way to make a bicycle wheel work as a driving up a mountain at 60 miles an hour thing. Okay.
Look forward. By the way, Adam, you can turn that feature of Sierra off.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. You don't have to enable it at all, and that's why I would say if you're prompted during an install, that's the main thing too. Because you're busy installing. You don't know. It doesn't tell you that
say
much.
No. Apple, just like, say
just
no.
Just say no. You can always get to it later, and they are also doing this. I mean, they're bundling a bunch of stuff in. So optimized storage also involves offloading the originals of photos. If you have a main Mac that's got all your originals and you've got a secondary MacBook Air that not much storage space, you can just get optimized photo storage, which is what you get now. So that's being built into that whole bundle. Or iTunes movies and TV show episodes that you've already seen, it can take off your disk because you've already watched them. So that's not a... some of those things are much less concerning than messing with your actual documents and data.
I was going to show some more images and stuff, but we only have a limited amount of time. Let's move on to the headphone jack, because I think that's the thing we knew was going to happen. Phil Schiller surprised me. I at the very beginning of the event, and I've been saying this for a couple of days, I said the most interesting thing will be to hear how Apple spins this, how Apple explains why they are removing the headphone jack, a well-known, widely used, open, as in non-proprietary connector, in favor of a connector that is owned by Apple, must be licensed for anybody else to use. The cynic in me would say, there's one word, profit. The word Phil Schiller chose was courage.
Yeah. I've already received, how many times have I received yet the picture of Bert Lahr in the courage. Wizard of Oz with that courage and then with Phil Schiller's face on it? Right now it's up to five.
Wow. Didn't take much time. What do you think? Is that a reasonable rationale? What courage is involved?
None.
Courage to take a lot of abuse from
that's true, or even to lose sales. Could it cost Apple sales?
It'll only cost Apple the sales from people who were already thinking really hard about switching to Android anyway, or people who didn't have that much of a connection to the iPhone to begin with. I think that they have hard numbers to demonstrate internal that reminds them that people are, if there's a reason why someone is going to not buy the iPhone 7, it's not going to be because they deleted the headphone port. It's something that, just like the crummy keyboards on a lot of the MacBooks, it's something that people will sigh and get used to because they're not going to hate it as much as they're going to hate switching to an entirely new operating system, an entirely new piece of hardware, and rebuying a whole bunch of apps. So that was, they had two good reasons after that. That was the number one, right? Yeah. And that was just silly.
The thing that I think is that it may actually, I don't think it would really prompt people to not buy the iPhone 7 exactly. It may prompt people to delay the purchase because they have to think about it. It's sort of like, but how am I going to do this and how am I going to do that? I just have to think about all this stuff. So, people may be putting it off longer and longer, possibly even for another generation as they work through what their issues are going to be.
Apple will. I shouldn't have had that spiced mocha. That's clear now. Apple did say they will include a $9 dongle in the box that will convert Lightning to analog, and that's good because it's only $9. I mean, Apple often overcharges for these dongles.
Well, and they're including in the box. I mean, it's free. Yeah. Everyone will get
and
one.
And they'll include a pair of Lightning headphones.
Right. They couldn't change that.
And also
the pricing of them. Once you lose them or put them through the wash, it's going to be $29 for replacement. I think that's about the same as what the regular wired ones cost. Or not, if it's more, it's not that much more.
Yeah, but the one thing that does hurt, though, is the people who lose them constantly, break them constantly, and actually like, you know, in essence, cheap headphones. You know, you can get a pair of decent headphones for $6 on Amazon if you're the sort of person who goes through them. And right. That's
and by the way, those $6 ones aren't much worse than the $30 ones. I mean,
right.
But the issue is going to be that even if that company, the $6 company, wants to sell Lightning-based headphones, it's going to cost them $5 just to license. I don't know what the fee is, but something like $5.
More than that.
Is it?
They're going to need to do the Made for iPhone program.
Yeah. And that's expensive.
And that's expensive and complicated, and you have to have, you know, suppliers who are approved. I was talking to a manufacturer of wireless sensor tags, you know, like HomeKit type stuff, and I said, "Is this going to be HomeKit compatible?" And they said, "No, because it's just too expensive. HomeKit also requires MFI certification, and it's just too expensive for us. We don't have enough reason to do it."
Yeah.
And also, remember, it's just a lack of ability to choose the headphones that you really, really want. If there's a punishment for not buying and into the Apple standard, and that is having to keep track of this $9 dongle, which it's going to happen. You're going to be unless you get a bit of Sugru and just glue it to the end of your Lightning-based headphones, you are going to lose this. You're going to be in a place where you cannot plug in to the device that you if you're using old headphones, you're going to be in a situation where you cannot use the headphones you want to use, or you're going to have to find an Apple store and shell out $9. And just like me with a couple of VGA adapters on my iPad, I now have three of them because of times where I was in a city and could not and thought I had it, but I didn't. So I'd have to find an Apple store and shell out $30 for another one of them. I mean, they did that. I don't feel as though the world is going to come to an end. I feel this is a neutral thing. The only time that I feel like I have to clear my throat and interrupt is when people say this is a brave and wonderful and important thing that Apple is doing, because they're also saying. The reason number two is that he mentioned
Phil Schiller said, and this it just made me queasy. Not merely that it comes down to courage, but the courage to move on to do something that betters all of us. Really, really, ridiculous. Phil, how does that better anybody except Apple's bottom line? Yep. Come on,
okay. And you want courage? Bundle the AirPods with every iPhone. That would be
that
courage.
That would be courageous and foolhardy at the same time.
That's saying.
That's my this is the other thing that concerns me. It strikes me that Lightning cables are more fragile, that they do tend to break more than other cables. Yeah, is that not the case?
Here is the Lightning cable that I have plugged into my iPad, and it's yellow, and I count on – here's the end of it that's starting to crack already. Yeah. They're not really good at that, and their difficulty is that I can't take the amount of money that I might spend on a pair of Lightning headphones and apply that to a purchase someplace. I won't want to invest in $200 in a really, really nice pair of headphones that I can only really use with this one set of devices. Same thing with the AirPods, which is $170 for a really nice pair of Bluetooth headphones, particularly one that doesn't have like connecting wires between them. Okay, I can see that, but no, you will not be able to use, information that I have right now, which is realize that I've been spending the last 2 hours talking into a microphone and a camera as opposed to calling engineers that I know. The understanding that I have right now is that, the actual data sheet on it says that it requires a device that can run a 2016 version of iOS or macOS. So the watch, the Apple TV, your Mac, your iPhones, if it run iOS 10, for instance, it'll run it. So it doesn't mean that I can take $160 and apply to one. I'm upgrading my audio experience everywhere. I spent.
But are you, if you're still using Bluetooth, what's the upgrade?
Better audio, supposedly, but
remains to be seen. We have to try them
again. Remains to be seen. Yeah. And also, if you want better audio, you have to now convince these people. Okay, but here are a pair of $180 headphones that I don't even necessarily need earbuds that are wireless that work for fitness. I just want great audio. Now, if you're going to sell me a pair of $200 headphones that are wired that have really good drivers and a lot of air around them, are you willing to tell me that these wireless headphones you're selling me that only works with Apple are going to be better than these wired headphones that I can use with my desktop computer, with my Windows machine, with my home stereo? It's
is there an issue with the new wired headphones of charging and listening at the same time? Do people charge their phone and listen at the same time? Obviously, you can't do it.
Right? Yeah. No. But do they?
Do people do that? I guess at night, maybe if you're charging your phone, you've gone to bed.
Yeah, because if you're say that you're running your audio through speakers, your bedside, you would want to be charging your iPhone at the same time. I mean, I did think that the AirPods having a little charging case were clever.
They didn't invent that. My Moto Hints, Motorola Hints do the same thing. Any headphone earbud that just has the battery in the earbud has so little space for battery that it's not all day listening. So the solution is to have a larger case that has an all day battery. And when you're done listening, you put them in there. 15 minutes later, you can use them again. Kind of like the Apple Pencil. And so but that isn't anything Apple invented. That's, frankly, a necessity on anything with a tiny battery. So that's another issue. If you want to charge and listen, and I guess that's a use case for some people, that's gone.
Someone's going to make another breakout dongle that will have a lightning connector and an earphone connector, I think, on it.
Yeah.
And you buy this, and don't worry, you will solve every problem you'll ever have with it. But again,
actually, you know what? I do that on an airplane. I will plug in, if I'm lucky enough to have a USB port, I will charge my phone because I'm going to listen the whole flight on a long overseas flight, and I will listen on the headphones, and that way I have something to listen, something to use for a phone when I arrive. That's gone. Wireless it looks like the way to go, but again, we'll just have to see with these AirPods, only because Bluetooth is such a poor experience for most people.
As I've said many times over the course of this year, as this rumor of now fact has gotten better traction, they have not said a single thing in their three reasons that meant that they could not keep a headphone jack if they wanted one. So really, I wish you talk about real courage. Real courage is saying we simply don't want to keep making iPhones with headphone jacks. And we know that this is going to annoy a lot of people who are very, very sensible. And we hope we don't lose them as customers. But we want to go our own way with this, as opposed to saying there's things that we can't do with a wired headphone jack. And we've been stupid saw about it. Whipped out this photo of like telephone operators in the 1920s. We've been using the same connector for
that
all
really
these
pissed
years.
Me off, because those those aren't headphone jacks. That's a patch bay. And so the implication that we've been using headphone jacks since the turn of the century for operators is bogus. That's in fact.
I thought that was iCloud.
Tomato.
Isn't that how iCloud looks like behind
Well,
that?
I mean, that's Phil continues to impress me with he's a marketer. His willingness to kind of bend facts to suit the Apple story is very, very annoying.
I just think that there's a reason why it's been having a wired connector has been going on for centuries now, including why isn't he railing against like the HDMI cable? Why isn't that wireless? Well, because
it doesn't
electrons
work.
If you drop an electron down this end of this copper tube, it will shoot out the other end of that tube. And you don't have to configure it. You don't have to put a chip in it. It costs about as much as a length of copper wire. And so anybody can make it. And it's an open standard. So that's why there are a bunch of bogus arguments in favor of dropping the headphone jack. That's one of the bogus
options. So the legitimate argument would be, and Phil did make this argument, that it's to save space inside the case. Space, though, that I imagine they immediately gave up by putting a second speaker on the iPhone. Now that's nice. Now we have stereo sound, left, right sounds.
And the cutaway image they had of the iPhone had a big block for the haptic engine that they're using to power the
that's right. You need a new haptic engine for the home button.
Everything's a trade.
It's about the size of looks to be about the size of a stick of dentine gum or Trident Struglis gum.
So maybe that's it.
But again, these are problems that every phone manufacturer has, and almost every phone manufacturer has solved. So it's just, again, I wish they had it's completely legitimate for Apple to say that we are the people who get to design the iPhone, and we don't want to have a headphone jack anymore. And we're not doing this capriciously. We feel as though we're giving all of our users and any new users plenty of options to, we're accommodating them. But this is, we're making this decision first and foremost because we want to do this. That's real courage.
There also will be better battery life. I don't know if that's because of the expanded battery, room for battery. I think not. I think it's mostly because of the new A10 Fusion chip that goes into a low power mode much of the time. But Schiller claims an extra hour of battery life on the iPhone, extra 2 hours of battery life on the iPhone 7 over the iPhone 6S, right? And an extra hour on the iPhone 7 Plus. Already, iPhone easily a category leading battery life. So this is very welcome.
And two hours is not small. That is the difference between, oh, my God, where's an outlet? And, okay, there's no question I will make it home or I will make it to my hotel. That's a big deal. I think there are a lot of people who are not on the fence, but we're already like 2 miles away from the fence. We'll be closer to the fence or over the fence when they realize that they don't have to take a battery pack with them when they go everywhere.
Yeah. Still no wireless charging, which would have been nice. Had they added wireless charging, then it wouldn't be as much of a concern.
That wouldn't be. That's not as important on iPhones, considering that they do have such great battery life. It's nice. It's nice convenience. I can't imagine them.
It's not the end of the world.
If they're this pissed off about a headphone jack, I can't imagine how much Thorazine you have to shoot them up with to get them to actually make room for wireless charging.
Support for touch to pay in Japan. Using a Japanese standard, Finca standard, that's good news for people in Japan, and it's notable because it's the first time Apple has let anybody else have access to the NFC chip. They're actually being accused of anti-competitive behavior in Australia. I'm sorry for not opening the NFC chip to other vendors, and that means you'll be able to pay, by the way, with that new standard for the Japanese metro, the Underground.
Yeah, and they made a big deal about how they have Apple Maps in Japan and being able to integrate all that sort of stuff. Yep.
Also, available, as I said, for order on Friday, available to pick up a week from Friday, and the prices will not change. I'm impressed by that. Apple's able to deliver both these new phones at a similar price point. Identical
price
point.
The storage changes.
And the storage is doubled. Yeah. So they start, so it's no more 16 gig phones. Even the iPhone SE will no longer have a 16 gig unit available. Everything starts at 32. You know what? I bet Apple's as happy about that as customers. It must have been difficult to try to do updates in that constrained 16 gig space.
I have to admit, the 16 gig, I'm not sorry to see go at all.
Really?
I kind of felt... No, I said, I'm not sorry.
Sorry
to see that.
Yeah,
I should go. It was terrible.
Goodbye.
But,
go.
But I will say that I thought 32 and 64 were both good sizes.
Yes.
That to go from 32 all the way to 128, you know, I was like, yeah, I don't really need 128, but 32 could be pushing it.
Depends what you store on there. I mean...
It just feels like it's a big jump.
It seems like we store less these days because we use so much music in the cloud, streaming music and so forth. But when you're on an airplane, the ability to put your entire music collection on your phone is okay. And I keep about 30 audiobooks on my phone.
Yeah, it kind of makes me want to come back to revisit like Phil Schiller from the keynotes 3 or 4 years ago and say, how's that? People want to keep all of their data in the cloud and local storage is an important thing. How's that working out?
256 gig, although you'll have to get the Jet Black edition.
Which will get scratched, by the way. Apple has apparently a footnote about how micro abrasions may happen.
So remember, they did early on a shiny black iPhone. Now it was plastic it was an iPod, wasn't it? That was plastic and scratched like a mother.
Yeah.
But this... This is anodized aluminum. So is it the paint that's going to scratch?
Yeah, Daily Dot had something.
That's pathetic. That means you're going to take that beautiful phone and put it in a case just like always.
Yep. Just like all the others,
Don't get the – well, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Apple is saying the Apple Store page says the high gloss finish of the jet black iPhone 7 is achieved through a precision 9-step anodization and polishing process. Its surface is equally as hard as other anodized Apple products. However, its high shine may show fine micro abrasions with use. It's like microaggressions. if you are concerned about this, we suggest you use one of the many cases available to protect your iPhone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, they say that because otherwise they get sued.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows
nonetheless, it is. And, you know, I mean, there's a level to which these things get used. You know, stuff in the real world could never stay pristine.
Right. I just think if you have such a beautiful case, it's a shame to, you know, I mean, beautiful, you know, outside, a shame to put it in a case.
Well, and actually, I'll be curious about, we didn't say about how like the jet black and the matte black will feel, but you know I have a case on my iPhone 6 because it's too slippery. that it's hard to hold. Yeah. And so it has nothing to do with the performance of the, you know, the case, or I don't drop it, anything like that. I just worry about it slipping out of my hands, which I'd never had trouble with previous iPhones before.
Right.
So I do think that I'll be curious if the matte black and jet black have a different tactile feel. I assume the others will have the same slipperiness.
Yeah, I'm reading some people who Twitter feeds from people who are in the room, and one of them is at least saying that it's a lot grippier than he thought it was going to be. Right. I don't know if that means that he got, there are 30 people in front of him, and now it's just all sticky from journalism and analyst sweat. But
it's all the earwax from them.
All right, I'm going to take a break, get our picks of the day so we can wrap this up. But if you just some last thoughts, anything I've left out? I mean, there was such. For 2 hours, they get a lot in there. Anything else that
plus a 2x set from Shea.
By the way, and I didn't appreciate this at the time, but the first song she did with the bodies lying on the ground and the tears, I found out later that's a song she did about the Orlando shootings at the Pulse discotheque, and that's why the bodies and the tears. That was immemorial for the people who died in that horrible, horrific. Shooting in Florida. So that explains. And kind of not the most uplifting song to end the event with, but I love her as an artist. And
also, you have to,
I was glad to see her there.
Yeah. She's not the most accessible, and so therefore one of the people that Apple, I think, would tap for a performance like this.
Yeah.
You're never going to see Justin Bieber or someone like him, I think.
Well, they had John Mayer. That's pretty accessible.
Well, that was a long time ago.
Hey, but I have a long memory.
Here.
Anything else to talk about? I don't want to miss any of the fun that
They had a bunch of stuff on education and the Connect Ed program. The only thing I have to say is it sounds great. You know, they're talking about 114 schools and 50,000 students, and those numbers sound good, but when you actually look at the number of schools and students out there, it's such a drop in the bucket.
It's more like a pilot program, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't want to ever say anything negative about improving, you know, educational opportunities and things like that. But, you know, my son's a senior in high school, so I've been dealing with this for a while. And when I see what the schools are going through, so much of it is just based on money. And so, you know, our school went Chromebooks and just hugely cheaper.
Yeah, I think that better, right?
When I write my stuff tonight, I can't avoid the phrase that it'd be nice if schools could have Apple devices in them without having to get them for free from Apple. It'd be nice if they could actually afford Apple-made stuff that schools could afford to buy. Again, good stuff for the 50,000 kids who get to use the free stuff. But there's when I talk to educators, I know it's either Chromebooks or Raspberry Pi or a combination of both. And with Raspberry Pi, I know plenty of teachers that are like, look, if I can buy like 30 Pi Zeros for $150 and basically I'm teaching each one of these kids how to do something, and here's your own device to play with, I'll even do that. It's amazing what these things can do.
Gentlemen, prepare your picks of the week. We will be talking about those. In fact, I have the ultimate iPhone case coming up for you. I mean, this is one you won't mind putting your piano black iPhone in. But first, a word from Squarespace, the place to make your next website. We've had Squarespace as a sponsor for a decade now. Been thrilled to really, you know, help Squarespace become the power that it is. It is the place. If you want to make a blog or a online store or a portfolio as a photographer, an artist, but even just for the simple cover page, that's how I began my Squarespace journey with my latest site, leolaporte.com. I created a cover page because I just wanted a place to go where I could put links to my social network and so forth, and a little slideshow. This is just a simple cover page. It took me no time at all. And by the time I did that, I went, oh, I should try some other templates, maybe create a blog, a photo portfolio, an event calendar. And by the time I was done, I had a full-fledged website. Couldn't have been easier. Mobile responsive, you bet. This site looks great. In fact, I can even demonstrate it at any size. And that's one of the great things about Squarespace. You can actually squeeze it down to smartphone size, and it still looks fantastic. E-commerce comes with every template. The best designers plus the best engineers make it a fabulous place to make your site. They also have domain name sales now, which means it's the best place to get a domain name because you immediately get a parking page that's not got ads and junk on it. It's beautiful parking page as you begin to develop that site. That's at the new Squarespace domains. They've always offered a free domain name with a year registration. Incredible 24/7 support. New templates all the time. In fact, they've just introduced their kind of their, I'd call them like magazine style templates with grid style landing pages and infinite scroll related posts, all the things that make, you know, these well-known web publications look so great. And it's yours. So you don't have to have all that fancy engineering and design team behind you. You've got it already with Squarespace. Squarespace is the best hosting, the best software to make the best websites, regardless of what you want to do. Either with just a few clicks of the mouse, or if you're a designer and you want to get into the guts of it, you can do that. You can also go to third-party Squarespace designers, developers, and experts that are very affordable. That's what Lisa did for her site. Artisanal agency, and man, she got a great looking site for very low cost. It's just a fabulous place to create your next website. And by the way, if you've made three or more active Squarespace websites, welcome to the Squarespace Circle. This is new membership, includes advanced guides, optimized support, 6-month trial periods for new projects, and a lot more. Try it free. You can do what Alex Lindsay does, create a website for somebody. He said, anytime I go to a restaurant, they don't have a web page. Like, what business doesn't have a web page these days? He'll actually create a free Squarespace site for them while he's eating dinner, and then just say as he's leaving, here's a site. Why don't you use this? That's cool. Squarespace.com. Don't forget the offer code MacBreak. You don't need it for the free trial, but you will want it if you decide to buy 10% off as a way of saying thank you and showing your support for MacBreak Weekly. Squarespace.com. Don't forget the offer code is MacBreak. Adam Engst, I don't mean to spring this on you, but you got you got something you'd like to pick of a software or hardware, anything you want to show us?
I do. The thing that I was a little hesitant about this because it's not quite there, but it's close. This is a browser extension called Greenhouse. Oh. And the idea behind Greenhouse is that there's versions for Chrome and Firefox and Safari and all that. But what it does is it scans the text of every web page that you view. And if it finds the name of an elected representative or candidate for, say, president, it highlights it. And you can mouse over and it will show you where this person gets their money.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, the reason why I was hesitant, this was done a couple of years ago by, the guy was a high school sophomore. And
you're kidding.
I am not kidding. High school sophomore, I think in Seattle. And I was going to write about it. I learned about it after the last election cycle. So I've been holding on to this for 2 years to write about in tidbits because it's really only interesting during election cycles. And so I was comparing some of the data against where he gets the source, and it wasn't matching. So I contacted him, and he said that he doesn't have the current data for people other than Clinton and Trump.
Okay.
He's
getting it from opensecrets.org, so you could always go there and get more.
And it's so basically he's now a freshman at Stanford University.
Wow.
He just started, and he's trying to get all this new data into it.
I'm looking at the New York Times page. He's got Hillary Clinton. He's got Bernie Sanders, but he doesn't have Jill Stein, the Green candidate. So, that would be great to see.
It's one of those things. He promised me that he was
awesome.
Working on getting the data up there. Hope he does. I think this. I mean, it was great to hear that this kid did this, and it's so neat to be reading along in some article about what's going on in politics, and you just hover over and you're like, well, it looks like so and so is getting his money from oil and gas. That might be why he's voting this way.
Yeah.
So
how useful is that?
That's my pick of the week.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. It's the Greenhouse extension. I'm using it on Chrome, but I think they have versions for other.
Yeah. AllRGreen.us is the URL.
AllRGreen.us. Very good pick of the week. I just wanted to show something that I just got in the mail, and I'm really getting excited about it. In fact, so excited that I actually went out and bought some more of their products. This is it's not cheap. This is kind of a premium product called This Is Ground. They make leather cases. He says he's inspired by, remember the old, I used to have for years, I had a Franklin planner in a zip. Remember this in the zip?
The day planner.
He's inspired by that, but these are designed for tech. So, for instance, this is the newest. This is the Mod 3 that just came out. It's got here. I could show it over here. It's got a nice slot for my iPad Pro. You can. I'm going to use this on my travels. Of course, it's going to be fantastic. They have a variety of inserts that you can put in here. These are magnetic to suit your needs. So, lots of straps and holders for things like wires, pens, pencils. Everything you would want to put in here, and it just, and then it zips up, and it can hold a surprising. This is the new one that you just did, the Mod 3, and it's beautiful. Plus, it smells so good. Designed in California, but made in Italy, and of course, they're the master craftsmen of leather in a variety of shapes and sizes. He sent me this, and I thought, wow, that's really nice for review. And then I immediately went out and said, but I'm traveling. So let me see what else. And I ordered the backpack that does similar things. And you can. And the other thing I really like about this, you can order it with a Karma Go if you want built-in Wi-Fi, or a Tile if you don't want to lose it. I think that's really pretty cool, too. We're going to get them to use the tracker instead, but that's okay. Just really, the Tile's another Bluetooth tracking device. Beautiful leathers. Little pricey, like the backpack's $800. This Mod 3 tablet, I think, is $200 or $300. So they're not for the faint of heart or the.
But you don't want the native Italians to mock your style sense of your accessories.
Exactly. I really just, oh man, it just feels good to carry this around.
They look pretty damn nice.
Don't they look nice? You know, I have a fetish for this stuff. And a good leather case costs a lot of money, but wears quite well and so forth. I'm pretty impressed with what they've done for this. So just a little LA company you might want to keep your eye peeled for and save up your pennies for. And when your ship comes in, this is ground.com. This is ground. I thought since Alex Lindsay isn't here, I'd do something that costs an Alex.
it's the unit of money.
Yeah, $700 is one Alex. He's living in a different world entirely. Andy Anacco, your pick of the week.
Mine is something very analog, but very non-Alex in price, but very, very useful. It is, and this is a generic thing, not a specific, but a little pocket compass.
Ooh, I like it.
An actual pocket compass. I'm suggesting that you buy this. This is made by Brunton. I'm suggesting you go out and you buy a little pocket-sized keychain compass made by a manufacturer that makes like $300 and $400 and $800 compasses. This is the bottom of their range.
Oh, but that means nice. That
it's not possible for Brunton to make even a cheap compass that is not a good compass. It's liquid filled. It doesn't like jam up. It's definitely will point to magnetic north. And I'll give you two good reasons why this costs $6. And so you buy this, you throw this into your laptop bag or your backpack or whatever you carry every day and forget that you have it until the day that you are like at an airport and Google Maps or Apple Maps is giving you walking directions. It's like, okay, you just want to go this way and it's north. Like, yeah, but which way am I facing right now? Most of my walking I do when I travel is walking a block north or south to figure out what is the next cross street and which way am I actually facing. Because Mr. Telephone, you think with this arrow that you're putting on the map that I'm facing a certain way, but you're almost always wrong. But then you'll remember, wait a minute, didn't I spend $6 for a real damn compass but just 3 months ago? Oh, yes, there it is. And yep, I'm facing east, which means I walk this way.
The perfect iPhone accessory, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
A physical compass. I do that all the time, though, Andy. Yeah. It thinks that I'm pointing this way, but I'm not.
Yeah.
It never works. I finally got sick of it. And so I bought like three of these. I've got one in each bag and a third on the side. Yeah. But the other reason why is you should never be 100% dependent on, I will be able to navigate my way out of here, provided that my battery has a charge and it can get a signal. And if you have this with you, it basically means that there is no way, no how. As long as you looked at a map beforehand, say, okay, my phone is dead. I don't know exactly how to get home, but I remember back my hotel. But I remember looking at the map that Westchester is southeast of here, of where I'm staying. So if I just keep going in this direction, I will eventually get there. I used it over the weekend. Not that I needed it necessarily, but I was at the state park. This beautiful, beautiful woods I've never been in before, and dense woods with like little trails that are kind of not really marked, but of course people use them for decades. And fortunately my phone was working. I had plenty of battery left and I had like a headlamp on, even though it was after dark. But it was the belt and suspender stuff where I had my phone out, but also had this looped around my finger. So I knew that, okay, I know this, as long as I keep going north a little bit, east or north, that's where the main road is. I was never lost, but that meant that there was no way that I was going to get lost just because I had this with me.
So some years ago, Andy, I did some orienteering races. And for those who don't know, orienteering races are races where you're actually trying to
hit
certain points. I figured, okay, I'm probably not very good at the map stuff, but I can maybe make up for it in the running bit. I ran so many miles that I didn't need to. It turns out compass and map work is something that is a little harder than a lot of people think it is. And so definitely worth putting some thought into maps when you are not under stress if you're interested in using the compass for real.
Yeah. And I just want to underscore again, this one made by Brunton is working great for me. However, I'm saying just don't go to Amazon and say, oh, look, here's a no name compass, like a little pocket compass it's 10 for $5. I'll buy one for everybody. I actually started off by buying a couple of those. And the thing is, they jam up and they don't really work. Again, just when you see a model that's a size and a price you like, that's fine. Just take the brand name, put it into Google, and so long as it takes to a website that has. And now if you are in the active military, here is the one with 1,800 different attachments that will help you to navigate across a desert 800 miles. Okay, I think these people know how to. They will not put their name on something that is going to let you down, even if you're just trying to get out of a state park.
Wow. I'm thinking I need one before I leave the country. I'm going to be in St. Petersburg. I don't know where the hell I'm going to be.
Oh, especially internationally. I can remember a couple of times where I thought that, well, gee, I don't really need to buy. I'm only going to be here. I'm only going to be in Barcelona for 2 days. I'm not going to buy the international data. But I'm meeting someone for dinner, and there's a map here, and I just need to know where I am relative to where I used to be and what direction do I have to head in. And that's when I said, okay, I'm going to now just go on, find a Wi-Fi hotspot, go to my AT&T site and buy data because I can't deal with this. But if I had a $6 compass in my hand, I would have known, okay, I know that the hotel is here. I know the restaurant is west. If I keep going west, eventually I will find a landmark that will let me get it.
Andy is such a nerd, says our chat
cheapskate.
Room. And a cheapskate. $7. From Brunton.
$6. Well, okay, shipping, but
yeah.
Hey, great show. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on this most auspicious yearly annual holiday, the day the new iPhones come out. Andy Iannocco at the Chicago Sun-Times, you may now get to writing. I have a feeling you've got a little bit to file.
I got the only thing I can do before I start writing is I did take some pizza dough out of the freezer. It's now like in a cloth-covered bowl. I get to at least get the oven preheated so when I can take a break, I can have a hot, fresh oven pizza. But I'm not allowed to leave the house to get dinner.
Son of a gun, that sounds like fun. Yeah. I'm coming right over. Also with us, as always, a thrill and a pleasure to have Adam Engst, my personal hero, because he created Tidbits and kept me knowledgeable back in the 90s, kids. Mm. In the 90s. And he's still doing it. TIDBITS.com. Of course, you can get it for free, but subscribe to help support Adam and his team do great stuff. And look for the In Control guides. There's always good information there that you can really use. Ebooks available on every platform.
And just, I have to say, a shout out to Tanya and Josh Centers and Michael Cohen and Julio Ojeda Zapata, who have been writing while I've been here.
Nice.
So our coverage is going up as we speak. And huge thanks to them for what I would normally be heads down in the keyboard doing as well. So I get to edit now.
Very. Back to work. Back to the grindstone, right. You and your penguin. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Normally every Tuesday. We did it differently this week so we could cover the Apple event. 11 a.m. Pacific on Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC for Mac Break Weekly. The team will reassemble next week. I still will be here, not on vacation quite yet. I hope you will as well. If you can't be here live, you can always get it on demand after the fact. twit.tv/MBW or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're on every platform. Stitcher, the Twit apps are everywhere. Slacker, everywhere. Just make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'll see you next time. But now back to work, my friends, because guess what? Break time is over. Bye-bye.